celebrate America's independence with First Conservative Baptist Church, Sunday, July 3rd, with the Pickering Family Singers. It all starts at 10 a.m. with the Pickering Family Singers in concert. The concert is followed by a message from Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Then it's an old-fashioned barbecue with pork, chicken, and all the fixings on the church grounds. Everything is free. First Conservative Baptist Church is located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, 1 mile south of I-295.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Emily Nunez, candidate for a Florida House seat, District 15. We are talking about the issues and how she stands on some of the issues. Emily, let's go back to square one for just a moment. For some of our listeners that may have just tuned in, or for those that did not get the information down on paper, tell our listeners how they can reach you, your email address, website address, telephone contact. And let me say this to our listeners. I believe that God would have us to support Christian conservative candidates that are willing to take a stand to continue to preserve our freedoms in our state. It is the securing of the free state, as I call it, and the state of Florida is considered a free state, and I'm thankful for that. I'm delighted that we have a candidate that is running on the basis of just taking a stand on the issues without fear or favor. Emily, give that contact information again for our listeners.
Sure. It's EmilyNunez.com is my website. My email is Emily@EmilyNunez.com, and my cell phone number is 904-403-8903.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask Emily a question that perhaps you have not heard before, and then I'm going to ask her to explain it. Emily, have you watched the movie called 2,000 Mules? If so, would you please explain to our listeners carefully, succinctly, what 2,000 Mules movie is about, what you learned from it, and whether you find it to be credible?
Certainly. I have seen 2,000 Mules. It's a documentary that just came out with Dinesh D'Souza and an organization called True the Vote. And it covers the presidential election, the stolen presidential election. And it looks at ballot harvesting and some of the issues that can be seen from different sites in Georgia and other states, of where you can actually see on film people, you know, turning in votes at 2 o'clock in the morning. I think that it is credible, you know, and I think that it just, instead of giving us more answers, it only gives us more questions. And I think that it's sad that, you know, taxpayers pay so much money and government spends that money on things that we don't want. And the one time where taxpayers want something to be done about this, they've gotten, you know, little to no resolve. you know, we can have a January 6th committee, but we can't have an election integrity committee to actually find out what happened to, and make people feel secure that their vote and only legal votes are being counted.
Emily, what are we doing in the state of Florida that would make sure that we have a secure vote for 2022 and looking forward to 2024? Are we doing anything that's exceptional in order to prepare for that, protect for that? How do you feel our governor has done on that issue?
I think that the governor is doing well. He did pass a law about ballot harvesting here in the state of Florida. We're not going to have it. I think that one thing I would like to see maybe be done are election audits. I don't see why we can't have an election audit done or annual election audits done as needed, here in the state of Florida. That would be another thing. But I think the governor is doing a great job in making people in the state of Florida feel secure about our votes, but we certainly have some other, things that we could do with voter rolls, et cetera.
Emily, I'm looking at an article. Headline says, Texas GOP passes a resolution declaring Biden is not legitimately elected, dated June the 19th. Texas Republicans passed a resolution on June the 18th saying that Joe Biden was not legitimately elected and that substantial election fraud in key metropolitan areas influenced the results of the 2020 presidential election in favor of Joe Biden. Quote, we believe that the 2020 election violated Article 1 and 2 of the U.S. Constitution, that various secretaries of state illegally circumvented their state legislatures in conducting their elections in multiple ways, including by allowing ballots to be received after November the 3rd, 2020, stated a resolution passed on Saturday, the last day of the three-day biannual Texas GOP convention held in Houston, Texas. Quote, the state's GOP, the largest in the nation, passed the resolution after all of the delegates sat through a Thursday screening of The 2,000 Mules, a documentary directed by conservative author and filmmaker Dinesh D'Souza. That's how powerful The 2,000 Mules were, how powerful it was to them and how they viewed it in making that resolution. Do you think that would have any value in the Florida House if a resolution like that were to be passed?
I think that it would send a message to the rest of the United States about where Florida stands on that issue and what we think. Do I think that it's going to happen? No. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running, because we go back to that whole, the moral courage and saying what needs to be said and done to effectuate change. And I just don't think that we have the leadership right now that's going to be willing to pass that resolution or put forth that resolution from the Florida Republican Party.
I'm in full agreement with you. This is the reason, ladies and gentlemen, we need Emily Nunes in the Florida House representing we the people in the state of Florida, and more particularly in District 15. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 831-0917, 831-0917. Your telephone call goes directly through to the studios, right to our microphone, so that we can interview you and talk with you about your questions, comments, dialogue, and discussion on the issue. Emily, tell us your position on the CRT.
I think that critical race theory is in itself inherently racist. It teaches victimhood, victim mentality, and, the idea that you are either born born to be racist or born a victim. Just on that premise alone, it's absolutely absurd. People come to this country because of the freedom that they have and the opportunities that they have to succeed as much as they want, conversely, to not succeed at all. More people are coming here to the state of Florida and even to the United States because of that, not leaving. And I think that CRT is inherently evil, and we need to rid it, of everything.
Emily, that brings me to another question. I'm in full agreement with you, by the way. It brings me to another question. The House Bill 1557, which was voted out of the House and the Senate, signed by the governor, became law, and it makes it illegal for a teacher or for a school, public school teacher, public school system in the state of Florida, to teach the CRT, the critical race theory, or the LGBT, or to promote the LGBTQ agenda. And it's for kindergarten through third grade. Do you believe that needs to be expanded from kindergarten through high school?
You know, I'm a product of the public school system, K through 12, and I never remember needing to learn or hear about any of that, and I turned out just fine. I would absolutely support that happening for K through 12, and absolutely, I think it should. None of those issues should be placed in the hands of the teacher. Those are for parents to decide if and when those conversations, if ever, need to happen. I would encourage it to be expanded to K through 12.
I think it should be. I'm in full agreement. But let me kind of piggyback on that question with a follow-up on that. What should be done in the state of Florida? This is not just hypothetical. It's really taking place in some of the counties. What should be done in the state of Florida if there's some school boards, some school superintendents, some school teachers in some of the counties that are refusing to acknowledge House Bill 1557, which is now law, that makes it illegal for a teacher to teach critical race theory or the LGBTQ agenda? How should the state respond to that? How should the governor respond to that? What additional legislation do you feel needs to be passed that would make sure that it is carried out in every county and every school district in the state of Florida?
Well, I think in addition to the bill you mentioned, we also had the Parents' Bill of Rights that was passed into law, which, you know, lets parents know, you know, what their rights are with regard to the schools and what teachers can and cannot teach. I think that was a good step in the right direction. Now, how we follow up on that or how we implement the, you know, I don't want to say reporting because we don't want to be communists, but how we implement and make sure that they're being upheld and they're not violating that law. I don't know what the right answer is for that. And that's definitely something that needs to be explored. I've asked Representative Cord Byrd about that, and I think they were at that time when he was still in, they said they were exploring what the right way is to make sure that those that were violating the governor's law or our law were held accountable for that.
Well, I know in interviewing Charlotte Joyce, a conservative school board member here in Duval County, she has brought to light that the Duval County School Board is simply planning and by policy, planning to simply ignore the new law with the idea and the mindset that we're going to fund it. It's a lot of it is being funded out of private funds given to the school board to do so. And according to Dr. Green, the superintendent of schools, there's a mindset that basically the law is not going to tell us what to do. And I'm not putting words in her mouth. That's my summary of her position. And I know down in Broward County and Miami-Dade, there's some of the school districts there that have simply thumbed their nose at the new law and said we're not going to inculcate that in our thinking and our teaching. And I believe there needs to be some teeth in the law. Now, with the Family and Parents Bill of Rights, I've read that. There's some levity in that that gives should cause pause for any person to think that they can ignore the law. But there's the mindset that we're going to do so. And it was just my thought that I needed to ask that question to determine, do we have enough groundswell momentum in the Florida House to do anything to put teeth in that law that's now being ignored by several counties in the state of Florida? Now, another question, Emily, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we're interviewing Emily Nunez. Emily is the conservative candidate for District 15 for the Florida House. We're looking forward to having her elected. Looking forward to seeing what she is going to do to help inculcate change and to further secure our free state for the state of Florida. What or should the Florida lawmakers do in trying to prevent the drag queen or the drag pride for kids in the schools? How should we respond to that in the state of Florida?
I know that the governor is exploring, you know, with the Department of Children and Family Services, you know, what the grounds here are for having, you know, I guess making it a felony to take underage or to take children to drag shows. Why this even needs to be said right now in this, you know, this country, the state that we're in is unbelievable. Years ago, you know, Child Protective Services would have went right in and taken, you know, children away, or, you know, definitely evaluated it for sure. But I do support, and I've already made a commitment to my followers of my campaign that I will pass legislation to ban children from going to drag shows, and I will support the governor in any steps that he takes to protect children here in the state of Florida.
I'm looking at an article, Emily, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Florida Governor DeSantis wants the CPS, Children's Protective Services, to take children away from parents attending drag shows. Now, this article was written as an anti-DeSantis piece, a hit piece. It was basically saying that the governor's wanting to take children away from their parents if they go to a drag show, but he is also refusing to allow children to be vaccinated in the state of Florida. So this writer is saying that the governor wants to murder children by not having them vaccinated, but he wants to protect them from drag queen shows. This article says late last week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis criticized a family-friendly drag show held at a gay bar in Dallas. Quote, "That is totally inappropriate," said DeSantis. "That is not something children should be exposed to. We have Child Protective Services on the books," the governor said. "We have laws against child endangerment. It used to be kids would be off limits. It used to be everybody would agree to that," DeSantis continued. "That is just, it just seems like it's concerning, and every effort should be taken because of exposing kids more and more to things that are not age appropriate," end quote. And he goes on, and that writer goes on with his diatribe of complaining against Governor DeSantis for wanting Child Protection Services to protect kids, but at the same time, not wanting kids to get a vaccination. Is there a corollary there? Am I just missing the element of what that critical writer was saying? Is there a corollary between the two, or should the two even be in the juxtaposition with the question?
I don't see how you can compare medical decisions to taking a child to something that's completely inappropriate for a child to be at. Medical decisions should be case by case and up to the parent to decide to do that. The governor never said no kids can get vaccinated. He's saying he's not forcing any kids to get vaccinated, but I don't think that you can compare that to a drag show that was clearly not kid friendly. It was absolutely disgusting, and I think that the governor, you know, is on the right track and on the right path with exploring what can be done there to protect children.
Absolutely, I'm in full agreement with that, and that was a good understanding and entanglement of the juxtaposition of the two. And that leads me to tell us about your support for medical freedom in Florida.
I 100% support medical freedom. I think that it was an absolute tragedy, and that some of these medical boards that were created are now almost exercising police power with doctors telling them what they can and can't prescribe, what they can and can't say to their patients, or their licenses are going to be pulled. There's nothing in Florida freedom about that. I don't think that anyone should be told that they have to take a vaccine to travel or to go to work. As I stated before, I don't have the vaccine. I treated myself with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin when I got COVID. And it's just absolutely insane that these draconian measures are being taken for a virus with a 98%, you know, success rate of being, you know, okay. Yes, I support medical freedom, and I think something needs to be explored with getting entities like the CDC and others to never be able to exercise those types of powers, those overreaches again.
Absolutely. Emily, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I do am passionate about one issue, and it links with what we were just talking about. Senate Bill 7014 passed the Senate. House and the Senate, signed by the governor. And Senate Bill 7014 gives the all doctors, all hospitals, all medical facilities and associations in the state of Florida 100% immunity, 100% immunity against suit for any malpractice, especially related to COVID. If a patient is in the hospital and they are tortured to death and refused, the patient is refused to be able to receive hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, other life-saving tools, if you will, against COVID. I am interested in finding legislators that will go in this new election cycle and will reverse 7014, which gives blanket immunity. And blanket immunity was pushed on the legislators in the House and the Senate on the basis that if we don't pass that, the lawyers will sue the doctors and the hospitals out of business. Yet, contrary-wise, between 2020 and 2021, one of the major hospital systems in America had a 573% increase in net profit, with a $1.9 billion net profit because of following the CDC protocol and the CDC protocols killing patients. And yet we in the state of Florida have given the hospitals and the doctors the liberty to do so, and you cannot file suit against the physician of the hospital. Are you familiar with that law?
I am somewhat familiar with that bill, and I know that I don't agree with being able to be 100% immune from that, especially when there were several hospitals within the state of Florida that actually shut down during COVID because nobody was going in to be treated. And the idea that now that, you know, everything is open and there's treatment happening, that they should be completely blanket immunity from anything happen with regard to COVID. I think that that should be explored. Absolutely.
Absolutely. There's no other industry, there's no other business, there's no other profession, there's no other manufacturing, et cetera, that has total blanket immunity by legislators preventing we the people from having the freedom of finding in a due course of law whether or not we're right or the physicians are wrong. Emily, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Let's take a brief break away from the questions. I'd like for you to give our listeners a little background on who you are, why you're running, your telephone number, your email address, how they can come on board. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm inviting you to come on board with Emily. Hold her hands up. We want her in office, not the rhino that's running against her. Speak to our audience for just a moment, Emily.
Sure. My name is Emily Nunez. I'm a Republican running for the Florida House, District 15. My website is emilynunez.com. My email is emily@emilynunez.com. And my cell phone number is 904-403-8903. I am a 12-year military veteran of the Navy and Marine Corps. I now help small businesses with their retirement plans. I am running for office because I feel like there is a lack of moral courage amongst elected officials to say and do the things that need to be said and done to effectuate real change. I believe life, liberty, property, and the only thing that I'm ever going to promise is to hold myself accountable to we the people and to never listen to special interests, lobbyists, or party leadership in regards to my decision and how I legislate for the people.
Very good. Thanks. Well stated. Are you interested in or are you committed to be on board to pass a heartbeat bill in the Florida House?
Absolutely, 100%. And honestly, with the Republican majority that we've had in the House and the Senate, I don't know why a bill such as that hasn't already been passed. The same can be said about constitutional carry. So absolutely, yes.
We touched on that. Explain to our listeners constitutional carry and why that is so vital.
Constitutional carry, it's not that Florida, there's 22 other states that have already passed constitutional carry, and it gives you the right to open carry without a license, a firearm, and that should not have been the right, should have much more easily taken away than given back. But, you know, this day and age with where we're at, I think everyone should feel empowered to protect themselves. unfortunately, we have, you know, some Republicans that are willing to compromise with Democrats right now on our Second Amendment, which should be a non-negotiable. We should absolutely not be supporting anyone that wants to negotiate on our Second Amendment. But it's our constitutional right to bear arms, and they shall not be infringed, and they should have never been infringed upon. We should be allowed to protect ourselves.
That links to a very vital question. In the state of Florida, since Rick Scott signed into law the red flag law in the state of Florida, we've had over 9,000 citizens, legal citizens with legal firearms that have had their firearms taken. Some of them have now been 3 and 4 years in court trying to get their weapons back and their right to keep and bear arms back. Are you willing to make a commitment to do all in your power as a legislator to reverse the red flag law in the state of Florida?
Absolutely, yes. I've already made a commitment to my followers of my campaign that if I am elected, one of my first bills will be to reverse red flag laws here in the state of Florida.
And for the benefit of those listeners that may have never heard of the term red flag law, take a minute to just explain the red flag law, why it is unconstitutional.
It gives the government permission to remove your firearm without due process on the basis of your mental health. They can just deem you mentally, you know, not stable, and they take away your firearm, your ammunition, and completely prevent you from being able to have access to any of those until they deem you suitable to carry those again. In considering some of the decisions that have been made for us over the past year by elected officials, I don't know that they would have ever, I don't want some of the people like that deciding if I'm mentally unstable or not.
Yeah, it goes back to the old cliche, who's to say who's crazy?
Exactly.
and with the red flag law, for the benefit of simplifying it for our listeners, your next door neighbor can get angry with you, or your boss can get angry with you, or someone that your enemy could file a complaint that you're walking up down the sidewalk with your weapon in your hand threatening to kill somebody. And it'd be totally a phony farce call, surreptitiously made. And the next morning before sun up, the the thugs with badges or otherwise called law enforcement would be at your door to confiscate your weapon. It is the confiscation of the firearm without due process, just as you said. Emily, we've got about a minute left, but what is your position? You know, the Department of Justice with Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, has been on the sidelines saying nothing, doing nothing in relationship to the mobs that are threatening the U.S. Supreme Court justices. We've got about 20 seconds. Take that 20 seconds to explain your position on that, what's right and what's wrong with it.
I don't think that anyone has the right to come and harass anyone at their homes, and I think that this is where we really have to start taking a stand as Americans, as elected officials, and really taking a stance against, you know, people who are deciding to harass, you know, others in their homes. And this is why constitutional carry is so important. Second Amendment is so important, because if, you know, God forbid, the police can't make it to you during an instance like this, well, you need to be able to protect yourself and take the appropriate action. So we really need to be finding ways to get rid of gun-free zones, make people, enable people, and provide them, you know, with ways to protect themselves and their home, and
absolutely
stand up to the mob, because once you buckle on one issue, they just keep coming back for more and more and more and put.
Absolutely. Emily, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE.